If you'd like to go ahead and turn over to 1 Samuel chapter 17, we're going to be staying in this area of the Bible for most of the lesson this morning. And as you're turning over there, I'm going to make a statement that everyone who has been a Christian for any length of time well knows. The Bible is an amazing book, just in every way, shape, and form. And it's one of those things that no matter how long you've studied the Bible, you never run out of new discoveries. One particular part of the Bible that has been fascinating to me for a long time is actually all of the people who fill the pages but have very little told to us about them. Here are people who are a part of one of the, quote, major player stories. In some way, he's or she is coming in, and it's just as though there's a brief walk across the stage, and that's that. But if you'll look closely, on most occasions, what you find is that these people are teaching some pretty valuable lessons. These people are showing us things where God is wanting to make a point to us. And this morning, I want us to talk about one of those lesser-known people. In fact, if you were to talk with someone who just had somewhat of a cursory knowledge of the Bible, that person might not even have the idea that there was someone by the name of Jonathan within the Scriptures. Indeed, when you look at what's told to us about him, in comparison to David, very, very little told. And when we're done with his account, that's it, isn't it? We don't find him anymore after that, even as far as references go. But yet, this is a man who God has placed within the Holy Scriptures to teach a very, very valuable lesson. And that's a lesson on friendship. When we look at the Bible, there are all kinds of passages about friendship, especially in the book of Proverbs. You find what it means to be a friend, how to be a friend. Here is the epitome of that. Here is one who is the personification of what friendship is all about. And as we pursue the idea of this year of putting others first, I think we find in Jonathan a very worthy example of that. And this morning, that's what I'd like for us to discuss as we think about this man who teaches us how to be a friend. One of the lessons that I believe that stands out the most about this lesser-known person of the Bible is that he well illustrates the concept of being able to overcome himself. Here is a man who was in a lot of ways in a very great position, yet that did not keep him from recognizing what needed to be recognized. And so as we look at this, we're going to actually begin a little bit before the story of Jonathan as it comes about to chapter 17. And if you look in the text here, you'll recall that this is one of the most famous stories of the Bible, the story of David and Goliath. There is some question as to whether or not it's actually in the proper chronological order within the book. We're not going to deal with that this morning by any means. But yet I want us to think about something that's going on here in relation to Jonathan. You'll recall that Jonathan is the son of King Saul. He's the next in line for the throne. And as we look in chapter 17, Israel is being held hostage by this gigantic guy who's coming out and taunting them every day. And I want you to note something here about what we're told. If you look in verse 11, Saul, who is the king at that point, and all Israel heard these words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. It's very likely Jonathan is in that verse. It's very likely that as his father sat paralyzed in fear, and indeed much of all Israel sat paralyzed in fear, that Jonathan would have been a part of that crowd. I think it's very important for us to note that as we think about this prince and this next in line to the throne who is cowering with his father. Yet what do we find? We find that he watched as this young shepherd comes out and says, there's nobody who's going to talk about the Lord like this. I'll take on this giant. And he kills him. And after this account, in chapter 18, we pick up with Jonathan. And in verse 1, we find two phrases that are used in the relationship that Jonathan is going to develop with David. We find here that it says, as soon as he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. What we've got here is terminology that implies an inseparable bond. It would be, we might say, true blue friends. That wherever one was, the other was, that bond could not be broken. So here we are, the prince and the shepherd who's killed the giant. It says that their souls are knit together. But I think even more telling is the next phrase, when it says, Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Unless I'm mistaken, that phrase is only used 3 times in the Bible, and all 3 times it's used of Jonathan toward his relationship with David. Isn't that something? This phrase that shows the clarity of the relationship that they had, the bond that they had, but not only that, a deep down agape kind of love of putting one above oneself. And that's what we find in Jonathan. We go on down just a few verses and we find something else very telling about this relationship. It's a somewhat curious verse till you put it in its context as Jonathan here is developing in this friendship with David. It says, Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David and his armor and even his sword and his bow and his belt. What in the world is that about? Here you've got this friendship that's developed, and you come down a few verses and you find that Jonathan takes somewhat of the royal robe off and gives it to David, but then his weaponry and his armor. I guess I'm speculating a bit here, but I don't think too much. That as Jonathan saw this young man take on the giant, take on the Philistines, he recognized in him something that was not in himself. Though he was the crown prince, next in line for the throne, he had not had the courage to go and to fight that battle as David had. And I believe within these gifts, what we're finding is a recognition where Jonathan is saying, I don't care if I am the prince, and I don't care if you are just a shepherd. You are the one who deserves these. You are the one who has proven yourself in this battle. Now, let's combine that with also the fact that Jonathan is most likely several years older than David. Oftentimes when we see a child's book depicting them, both of them look about the same age. That's probably not correct. Estimates range from 10 years to 25 years old, older than David. But it's not a stretch to say that here is the prince, the crowned prince, who is talking to a shepherd who is very much his junior, and not only talking to him and developing this friendship, but giving him the recognition that he deserves of what he has done and who he is. And thus we look at this, and all of this combined shows us that Jonathan is an absolute man of humility. That all of these passages of friendship that we look at in the Bible, we find personified in him. Let me just turn to one in the book of Proverbs to see that. In the fact that he's putting others before himself, consider what Solomon said in Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 12. When he says, before destruction a man's heart is haughty, but humility comes before honor. Listen to that. What God is saying is, if you truly want to find what's honorable, if you truly want to be an honorable person, then you put others first. Humility always precedes that. What we find is going to be a failure in anything else. Think about it in relation to our theme passage for the year. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Can you imagine a member of the royal family taking this young shepherd under his wing, not only as a friend, but also one who he's exalting and saying, I recognize who you are. That's a man of humility. That's a man who's overcome arrogance. But now a very hard question. When we look at Jonathan, I want each of us to ask ourselves this question. Do I see myself? That when I look at this man who had respect, well, over arrogance, a man who put humility first so that he could honor David, do I see myself in that? Arrogance is perhaps one of, if not the most difficult thing to self-diagnose. Oftentimes, we give ourselves a very big pass on this. And we'll say, well, I'm not arrogant, I just simply know better. You know, I'm more informed, I'm better prepared than these other people who I'm looking down on, though we don't say that. The only way that we can ever learn truly whether or not we are arrogant people is to take a good, hard, honest look at how we treat one another. And so here in my evaluation of how I'm treating people, I'm going to learn whether or not, like Jonathan, I can show respect over that arrogant attitude. That's in so many ways. We think about some that would come to mind very quickly. We think about economic status. How easy it is if we have achieved somewhat of a financial success and maybe we've got a nice home and cars and we've got money in the bank and perhaps a lot of money in the bank. And we begin looking at people who have not achieved that way and we say, you know, if they just work harder, if they would just be more attentive to their jobs, well, that may be. But if I don't know that, that's an awfully arrogant statement, isn't it? I may have somebody who's working very hard in a very poor-paying job but gives it everything he can or she can every day. Do I have the right to look at that person and say, I wish they could be what I am? One that seems to have reared its ugly head in recent years is the idea of race. And it's the idea that because my skin is a particular pigmentation, that makes me a little bit better than everybody else. And let me say this right off the bat. Racism knows no boundaries with pigmentation. It's on every side, isn't it? No matter what color our skin might be, we look at someone else and very arrogantly say, well, that person is not as good as me. Or just as arrogantly say, that person thinks he's better than me. When I'm making judgments that I have no idea about, that's arrogance. Now let's draw it even a little closer to home. Because the boundaries of Christ don't always keep that at bay. And there are occasions, even within the spiritual family that we have, that there is a great temptation toward this arrogant attitude of, I know best. Sometimes we see that in generational differences. You've got some older Christian who thinks that the younger generation knows absolutely nothing, when it may very well be that the younger generation has some pretty good ideas of things that could be done. Or just as arrogantly, it may be a younger generation that thinks the older generation is out of date and tradition bound and knows nothing. Both of those are going to cause major trouble. We think about age. And age does not give leeway to arrogance. Whether we're old, whether we're young. We think about that also even with abilities. That I may think I have got some superior ability from someone else. And I pity all these poor folks who can't do things as good as me. Or who can't think as well as me. Or who can't come up with the great ideas like I do. Do we see what's going on here? That is the opposite of putting others first. That is planting myself in first place every time and saying everybody ought to listen to me. Everybody ought to think my answer is the best answer. That is exactly what Jonathan had overcome. A man who was a prince, a man who was next in line for the throne, a man who in many ways, as we'll see in just a few minutes, was a godly man. He could look and he could say, here is this guy younger than me, probably not as well off as Jonathan, who is superior than I am. And I'm going to recognize that. That's the man who's the epitome of friendship. But let's look at how strong that friendship actually was. Because, as many of the Old Testament Bible families were, we could classify them as dysfunctional, couldn't we? Most of these families, if they lived in 2018, would have their own reality TV show. And I think Saul's family would definitely be a part of that. And one thing we find that as we read of this give and take in chapters 18, 19, 20, and so on, that we're finding a lot of dysfunction that's caused because of King Saul. And one thing that stands out very clearly is that Jonathan did not learn his humility from his father. I think early on, Saul was a fairly humble man. When he became king, he did not feel himself worthy of that role, but he got over it. And what we find in these chapters is that Saul is actually going to work against his very son. I want you to consider in chapter 19 and verse 1, the conversation that Saul is having with Jonathan. It says, Saul spoke to Jonathan his son and to all his servants that they should kill David. You ever just stopped and thought about the audacity of that verse? That here in this conversation, what we're finding is that King Saul is going to his son and saying, son, you need to murder a guy. You need to wipe him out. Not for any good reason. Not because it's going to bring some vengeance of a guilty man, but because Saul is worried about what David is going to become. But notice what follows then when we're told Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David. From the passages that follow, we well know that Saul was aware that David was going to be the next king. We are also aware from the passages that follow, Jonathan knew that. Jonathan understood that. And yet what we find is that he refused to be persuaded to the wrong view, even when it was his father who was doing the persuading. Let's listen in to another conversation that's also quite dysfunctional. Listen to what Saul says in chapter 20, beginning in verse 30. Says, Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan, and he said to him, you son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, neither you nor your kingdom shall be established. Therefore, send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die. Listen to what he says to his son. I believe the indication here is Saul is saying, son, Jonathan, you are a son of perversity. Encouraging words from a father, right? You are a son of perversity, and you are a shame to the woman who brought you into this world. But then he plays on Jonathan's pride, which is a sad statement for a father-son relationship. He says, do you not realize that as long as he's alive, you won't be the next king? Jonathan knew that. He was aware of that. But yet here is Saul trying to plant that doubt in his mind so that he'll turn against David for his own selfish reasons. What we find in all of this is that far from being his father's instrument of torture or even death, Jonathan is going to rebel against that, and in loyalty, he's going to protect David from his father who wanted to kill him. We think about what we find, that Jonathan is willing to actually turn against his own family. Again, let's look at what goes on here. In chapter 20, beginning in about verse 13, we're just kind of picking up in mid-thought here, but it says, but should it please my father to do you harm? The Lord do so to Jonathan and more also if I do not disclose it to you and send you away that you may go in safety. May the Lord be with you as he has been with my father if I am still alive. Show me the steadfast love of the Lord that I may not die. And do not cut off your steadfast love from my house forever. When the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth. And Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David saying, may the Lord take vengeance on David's enemies. And Jonathan made David swear again by his love for him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. Who does Jonathan know is an enemy of David? Well, the guy who's just asked him to kill David. His father. And listen to the statement that he makes. When the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth, he knew his father was going to die because he was an enemy of David. And Jonathan is good with that. That's friendship. That is a friendship that in this case shows that blood was not thicker than right. But let's ask that painful question again. When I look at Jonathan, do I see myself? Am I willing to stand up for someone who is right, regardless of the opposition that I receive? Even if in the case of Jonathan, it might be someone in my own household who is berating someone who is standing up for the right, doing the right thing, where am I going to stand with that? I'm going to tell you, that's a hard question, isn't it? Because many times, we do allow the bloodline to make a whole lot of determinations. And we are very tempted to excuse things that are wrong with our family and stand with them against someone who is doing what's right. We simply cannot be that way if we are going to put others first. If we're going to be the kind of friend that Jonathan was to David. But we take that a step further and perhaps even a little more difficult. Will I stand up for one who is right even if it's going to cost me something? Do we realize what Jonathan was doing? Jonathan was siding with the one who he knew would be king instead of him. I believe Jonathan knew why. But nonetheless, that doesn't always mean that you do what's right. Yet here, when he realizes what's going on, he still stands with David and he says, look, if I'm still alive, when you come to power, you love me and show that steadfast love to me. And in fact, at one time he said, when I stand with you, when you're king. Though sadly, that would not happen. That's what God is desiring from us. And I think in light of that, we understand what Christ says in the New Testament in a passage that is often taken and abused by those who hate Christianity. They'll say, you see, it's not anything good. But when you think about this situation, it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? When the Lord says, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children, and brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. You know what the Lord's saying? You got to be like Jonathan. You got to be like a man that if you see something wrong with someone who's as close as a father or mother or wife or children, you side with Christ every time. That's the lesson we find from this man who is standing up to his father and saying, come what may, in the defense of right, even if it's to my own hurt, I'll stand where I need to stand. How does one have that kind of strength? To develop the kind of spiritual fortitude that says, I will stand with someone who is right despite what happens to me, despite what happens to relationships. Jonathan gives us the answer to that. It's someone who puts God over everything else. What we understand with Jonathan is that God held central position in his life. Did Jonathan have problems? He did. He didn't go after Goliath, did he? He didn't stand up and take that action. But really something that impressed me this time that really had not made such an impression before is the number of times in this short section on Jonathan that he references God. I'm not going to spend long on this, but let me take you on just a little quick tour. When we pick up with his story in verse 5 of chapter 19, "For he took his life in his hand and he struck down the Philistine, and the Lord worked a great salvation for all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood by killing David without a cause?" That's to his father. Chapter 20, verse 8, "Therefore deal kindly with your servant, for you have brought your servant into a covenant of the Lord with you." That's what we're told early on, that they made a covenant in the Lord in their friendship. Verse 13, "But should it please my father to do you harm, the Lord do so to Jonathan, and more also, if I do not disclose it to be with you and send you away that you may go in safety, may the Lord be with you as he has been with my father." We think about in chapter 20, verse 14, "If I am still alive, show me the steadfast love of the Lord." Verse 15, "And do not cut off your steadfast love from my house forever, when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David." Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "May the Lord take vengeance on David's enemies. And as for the matter of which you and I have spoken, behold, the Lord is between you and me forever." Does that sound like a godly man to you? A man whose language is peppered with the Lord's will, a covenant in the name of the Lord, as the Lord has promised. But I suppose the one of these passages that stands out the most clearly to illustrate the kind of man he was in putting God first in his relationship with David is actually found in chapter 23. "And Jonathan, Saul's son, rose and went to David at Horesh and strengthened his hand in God." Isn't that an amazing statement? That here he is, he's overcome the pride, he's overcome arrogance, he's put David first in everything above his family, and even after all of this, what he's doing for his friend is strengthening the friend's bond with the Lord. It is absolutely no surprise to us at all that when David receives word that his good friend Jonathan has died, that he could think back to a man who swallowed his princely pride to honor a shepherd with a slingshot. To not only do that, but to stand up to his father, and to not only do that, but to strengthen David's relationship with God. Here is a man who could do that, who could put David first because he put God first. And when you put God first, everything else will fall right into place. The day that David did receive the news of Jonathan's death is an emotional read. When you listen to the words of David, you can tell what David has lost. As he gives this eulogy, he says, "How the mighty have fallen in the midst of battle. Jonathan lies slain on your high places. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant have you been to me. Your love to me was extraordinary, surpassing the love of women. How the mighty have fallen, and the weapons of war perished." Women typically do a very wonderful job in the emotional relationships. Men oftentimes have difficulty with that. And so a man will come to rely on his wife because she can understand things and at times pick up on things and sense things and build him up even when he doesn't realize it. For two men to have that kind of bond is a very unusual thing. And thus, when he hears of Jonathan's death, he realizes what he's lost. Here is a man who always put David first. Here is a man who always had David's best interest in mind, who could do that because he was a man who put God first. And thus we come back to that very hard question. When I look at Jonathan, do I see myself? That I'm treating others with respect, and I'm treating others out of a sense of my own humility for their betterment, because that's what God has done for me. And when I can do that, I can be the kind of friend that God wants me to be. After a study like this, it's oftentimes easy to say, I wish I had a friend like Jonathan. There's nothing wrong with that statement. In fact, a whole lot right with it. To find that kind of bond, to find that kind of love and kindness, who wouldn't desire a friend like that? But that's not where we want to leave this. It's not that I wish I had a friend like Jonathan. It's I want to be a friend like Jonathan. That I can look really at every man, every woman, and say, I'm going to do my best for that person. But especially when it comes to my brethren in Christ, that I'm going to do what is absolutely best spiritually for them. That's being a Jonathan. That's being the one who can overcome all of the earthly temptations of pride and arrogance, to be the one who can stand with God and stand with others. As I look at the Bible, Jonathan is on the top tier when it comes to relationships, isn't it? And showing that love. Yet even he is surpassed by another. And that's the greatest friend that anyone has ever had. I couldn't say that the life of Jonathan really parallels the life of Jesus. In fact, in a lot of ways, it's somewhat the opposite. Jonathan had an angry father who wanted to kill David. Jesus has a loving father who wants to save so that death does not occur eternally. But I do know this, that long before Jesus ever came to this earth, Jonathan got it. He understood what God desired. He understood what many years later Christ would demonstrate to its perfect extent in the life that he lived on this earth. Because here is one also who put all of us before himself, who left that exalted position, came to earth, took on the form of man, to live amongst us so that he could save us. And I hope this morning that touches your heart of what a gift of friendship has been given. It is true, as the old hymn says, what a friend we have in Jesus. But this friendship does have requirements. And it means that you must come to God and take advantage of this great gift that you've been given. He's not going to force it on you. So this morning, if you're not a Christian, and you're ready to be in that right relationship with God, to be a friend to God, to be a friend to Jesus, as we sang about a few minutes ago, now's the time to do that by meeting the grace of God with your faith and trust in Him in the waters of baptism, so that when you come up out of those waters, you can rest assured that He's true to His Word and your sins have been forgotten and you're now ready to be that friend. Or maybe it's been that you've put yourself before this friend, to the point that you have turned to a life that's just not reflecting on that great gift that He's given. If we can pray with you about that this morning, we'll do it. Whatever it takes to be right with Him, won't you come while we stand and sing together?